Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, yes, welcome back, my friends, once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 75 for a special date of December the 18th, 2014. I'm your host, Jack, and I'm going to bring you through that magical world of servers, switches, Windows, Microsoft, and all things connected. Folks, this show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast. If it's tech, it's here. Check out all the great shows, great technology shows at techpodcast.com. This show is also now syndicated through Stitcher.com. It's a place where you can pick up many podcasts, not just technology ones, but all sorts of genres. You can check out all the great shows at Stitcher.com, or you can download their app for your smartphone. That's either the iPhone or the Android variety. Folks, please check out my website at tipsfromtheserveroom.com, where you can comment on these shows, and I hope that you do. You can also leave me voice messages, and after tonight's show, I'm hoping that there's going to be a lot of you with a lot of interesting questions from voicemails. You can send those at 724-701-0550. Once again, it's 724-701-0550. If you have any questions about the shows or ideas for future shows, please email those to me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter as at Technoman. Now let's first start this show off tonight by giving you a little bit of a backstory here. And the backstory to this show is the reason I didn't produce a show Tuesday night is because I knew I had a very special interview tonight. This is Thursday night. We're recording this December the 18th. And that very special interview was with Microsoft. And I received an email just a few weeks ago from a spokesman or a spokesperson for Microsoft that asked me if I would be interested in doing an interview about the end of life of Windows Server 2003. And I got the great opportunity, and I'll be introducing my guest here in this segment through this recording. We recorded the segment on Skype, and it was just a wonderful interview. I couldn't ask for anything more, and I was very humbled to be asked by Microsoft to do such an interview. So it was really, really a great time. So without further ado, we're going to go ahead and we're going to start with the interview. So let's go ahead and play that interview for you now. I'd like to welcome Eric Mills to the show. A few weeks ago, I was asked if I could do an interview with Microsoft, with a Microsoft spokesperson, and we're going to be talking about the end of life of Windows Server 2003. I accepted this, and now here we are tonight with Eric Mills. Eric, can you first tell me a little bit about what you do for Microsoft?
Hi, Jack. Sure. I do Windows Server marketing for Microsoft. I work in our OEM division in the U.S.
Okay, very good. So why is Microsoft ending support for Windows Server 2003?
Well, Windows Server 2003 end of support is just part of the normal product lifecycle for our operating systems. So Windows Server 2003 came out in April of 2003, and it was a great operating system widely adopted by a lot of folks. And it's been 10 years since we released it, and it's just part of the normal product release cycle for the operating system.
Okay, so in going with that, what does end of support for Windows Server 2003 entail, maybe overall for us, the technologists in the world?
Sure. End of support means something very specific. End of support essentially means no more updates for the operating system from Microsoft. And that includes not only feature updates and bug fixes, but things like critical security updates. After the end of support date, which is July 14th of 2015, after July 14th, 2015, Microsoft won't issue any critical updates for Windows Server 2003.
And overall, how many instances of Windows Server 2003 do you think are still in operation today in the world?
So it's tough to tell exactly, but we believe there are around 24 million instances of Windows Server 2003 still in existence worldwide. So very popular operating system, a lot of people still using it.
Yeah, and actually, just to give you a little backstory, we just found that we actually have 4 virtual servers still running it, so we are working to move those up to probably 2012. So what does end of support mean overall for your customers and your clients out there of Microsoft?
Well, end of support has a lot of implications. You know, not only are you not going to get any new features, of course, but when you have an unsupported operating system, you can run into security problems, compliance problems, as well as you're not using modern infrastructure. So you're running very inefficiently, and you're probably paying a lot more than you should. So we store a lot of important data on our servers. So if you think about, you know, the type of information that it's on a server, it's usually very critical. And by not having a server that's secure, you really put yourself at risk. Now, many companies also have compliance regulations that they operate under. If you think about companies that accept Visa and MasterCard, they have to operate under PCI compliance. Organizations in the healthcare industry have HIPAA compliance. And, you know, there's Sarbanes-Oxley compliance and many other types of regulatory compliance that has to be operated under. And when you're running an insecure or an unsupported operating system, you really put yourself at risk to fail any kind of compliance audit that you may have to go through in your industry. So it really means a lot to run a supported operating system. And there are a lot of reasons why you should do so.
Okay. Now, in my show also, we're kind of backtracking a couple questions here. But in my show, I talk to a lot of end users and support technologists out there. And we discuss a lot about upgrading. And I see Server 2008 R2, and we still have that in the server rack also. But I was talking to a few folks, and they said, well, the licensing structure has changed with 2012, so they're actually upgrading somebody to what I refer to as old technology, to 2008 R2, which is still good. But what would be your advice to that person, saying, I don't know to go to 2008 R2, or should I just go to 2012?
Sure. I would definitely recommend to upgrade to Windows Server 2012 R2, which is the latest version of the server operating systems. And there's a lot of reasons why you should do that. You know, at this point, Windows Server 2008 R2 is about to reach end of license for Microsoft next month. So, at the end of this month, we'll reach end of license for Windows Server 2008 R2. That essentially means you can't buy that operating system. Microsoft won't sell that operating system any longer. So you really don't want to start standardizing on something that we're not going to be selling. And then, you know, second, you know, you mentioned that you virtualized your Windows Server 2003 instances. And, you know, enterprises have been virtualizing for quite a while now, and that's starting to trickle into small and medium businesses who are seeing the benefits of virtualization. On Windows Server 2008 R2, we did include Hyper-V, but it wasn't nearly as robust as the Hyper-V that we have now with Windows Server 2012 R2. So if you're considering virtualization at all, and almost everyone should at this point, then Server 2012 R2 is going to offer a huge advantage over Windows Server 2008 R2. And just the capabilities, the flexibility, the productivity that you get, and the ease of management that you get. So there are a lot of reasons why you should move to Server 2012 R2. Now, some people may move to 2008 R2 because their applications require it. And that is one valid reason why you might want to move to Windows Server 2008 R2. But unless you're in that situation, there's not really any advantage to moving to 2008 R2 from my perspective.
And I would have to agree with you. And like I said, I work with a lot of folks on this show that I do that, you know, and I try to tell people, if you do have those applications out there and it is wrapped around 2008, you have to get with those vendors and get them on the ball and get them moved up, because you can't stay, you know, when Microsoft ends 2008 support, you're going to be sitting there with no support and with a vendor that won't move their software forward. So that's just a bad combination.
Yeah, absolutely. And any ISV that doesn't support an operating system newer than 2008 R2 really has to start moving forward, because you don't want to move to 2008 R2 because your application requires it, and then have to move again in a few years because of the end of support of 2008 R2. It makes sense to go ahead and migrate to the latest OS as long as you're able to do so.
Okay, so now we're going to back up, and I'm sorry to be – I hope it's okay that I'm taking you in different directions. Is that all right?
Let's do it.
Okay, good, because you have so much knowledge, and I just want to grab that right away. So now I want to talk to you a little bit here about the end of support for Windows Small Business Server, because I have some clients I work with, some doctor's offices, some maybe a couple used car dealers that there might be, you know, two or three people in an office space, and they don't have the financial structure there to keep throwing money into upgrading their servers. So when you say you have to upgrade your OS, they really, you know, are kind of hesitant about that. So I guess you're ending support also for Windows Server, Small Business Server 2003. Is that correct?
That is correct. We're ending support for Windows Server, Small Business Server 2003 at the same time that we're ending support for Windows Server 2003. And we stopped selling Small Business Server last year about this time. But the options available to a small business these days are actually really, really good. Instead of buying Small Business Server, which provides you with the server operating system and a on-premises license for Exchange and SharePoint Foundation, instead of running those things on-premises these days, for a small business, it makes a lot of sense to use something like Windows Server Essentials, which is a lot less expensive than Small Business Server, and then run those applications like Exchange and SharePoint in the cloud using our Office 365 product. So the combination of Windows Server Essentials plus Office 365, or if you have more than 25 users, you want Windows Server Standard plus Office 365, that combination really takes the place of Small Business Server these days, and it takes the onus off of the small business to run something like an Exchange server on-premises, which is pretty tough for a small business to do.
Okay, and you just opened up a really great question I was kind of kicking around here was, you said 25 users, so I guess that's the top of the user chain for Essentials?
That's correct. If you have more than 25 users, you don't want to use Essentials. You want to use Windows Server Standard. Windows Server Standard will support an unlimited number of users as long as you purchase a Windows Server CAL or a client access license for each of those users.
Okay, and I just did a whole show just maybe a month ago, and we talked about licensing Windows Server and client access licenses. The big questions I started getting back was, and I'm sure you can clear this up pretty quickly for me, is if I'm running a print server, does all those printers and all the hardware devices need a CAL, or is that just for the user?
Well, you can choose either way, whichever is best for you. We have user CALs that we sell, and we have device CALs that we sell. And you're required to have one or the other. So it's really a financial decision on which way is best for you. So if you have more users than you have devices, then it's less expensive to purchase device licenses. But that's very rare. These days, most users have multiple devices, right? So, I have a phone, I have a laptop, I have a desktop computer, and I may have a tablet as well. So those four devices, I could purchase four different device CALs, but it's a lot less expensive to just purchase one user CAL, and that covers me for as many devices as I want.
Okay, so you brought up a really great aspect there. Is I work in education full-time as a technology director, and we started this year as a BYOD, which I'm sure you're familiar with. That's the big catchphrase right now with bring your own device. So we have students bringing their devices in. So if I supply them with a Windows desktop, let's say on their iPad for a Windows experience, do I have to have a CAL for that user or for that device at that point?
You need a CAL for either the user or the device. I suspect you have more devices than you have users. So you would want to license a user CAL for each student.
Okay.
That's going to be your least expensive way to go. And that would cover them if they have phones, tablets, desktop computers, laptops, whatever they have. As long as you have a Windows Server user CAL for each user, it doesn't matter how many devices those users have.
And we have been seeing that. We've been seeing 2 to 3 devices per student. So it's really really something to be a part of.
Right. Now, going back to your original point, when you have Windows Server Essentials Edition, that's going to give you the equivalent of 25 user cals built into the operating system itself. So you don't need to purchase any cals if you have 25 or fewer users, if you're using Windows Server Essentials. But when you step up to Standard Edition, that's when you'll need to purchase a user or device cal for each user or device.
Good, great point. I work with a lot of other schools. You know, we talk, we're well networked together, and a lot of them still house their own Exchange server, and we're trying to push them, or I'm trying to convince them more or less to go to Office 365 or the cloud-based stuff. What's your views on that as far as one person housing Exchange? And I don't want to get too far off topic, but I can talk to you probably for days. What's the other part of Microsoft's backup strategy, because or their redundant strategy for email? Is my email housed in one Exchange server with Microsoft, or is it put across the globe?
Sure. So our customers have a lot of options these days, and this is a great option to have, to be able to host your email locally, like you've done historically, or offload that to the cloud in something like our Office 365 offering. You can also choose a hybrid approach where you run some of your users locally on premises and some of your users up in Office 365, and that's totally fine. So, you know, Microsoft offers the ability to do all of those. When you run Exchange locally on premises, the DAG technology built into Exchange provides local redundancy, so you're covered there, and it can even provide geographic redundancy. When you offload that to the cloud, Office 365 is going to provide local and geographic redundancy as well. Nobody wants to lose their email. So we recognize how critical that is, and how important it is that it's done right, whether it's locally or on-premises. So both on-premises Exchange and Office 365 are going to keep locally redundant and geographically redundant copies of your email.
Okay, perfect. Well, let's go back to a little bit about the migration stuff is something we've been talking about a lot on my show. And obviously, I told you we're doing that in our offices right now. How should small and medium businesses think about Windows Server 2003 migration versus a large enterprise? What would be the different ways of thinking about that?
Sure. So as a large enterprise, you probably have a lot of work to do, and you need to get started right away. Large enterprises typically have IT departments and people that specialize in the type of work that's required to do a server migration. As a small business, you may not have that local expertise available, and you may want to rely on a Microsoft partner to help you perform the assessment of what you have, make a plan for how to do the migration. The actual execution of the migration, and then the testing at the end. So, Windows Server migrations, especially from something like a 2003 to a 2012 R2, it's not something that you're going to do very often. So it may not be something that you want to build up a lot of expertise in, especially as a small business when you're just, trying to focus on customers and doing what you're good at.
Okay, and we just tried to do that on the server just yesterday, actually. We have a Windows Server 2003. We actually put a ISO image onto one of our virtual machines, and we thought we would just mount that ISO image and be able to do an upgrade. Well, that didn't go too well for us. Actually, it crashed at some point, and we read on the internet that a lot of people had that issue. So how would you go about doing a migration? Would you build a new virtual server, say a 2012 server, and migrate all that data over, or what would be the proper steps?
Yes, that's right. I mean, Microsoft does not support a direct in-place upgrade directly from Windows Server 2003 to Server 2012 R2. So what you have to do is either purchase new hardware or fire up new virtual machines and install Windows Server 2012 R2 into the new virtual machines or the new physical hardware. And then you have to migrate over everything that's running on the Server 2003 instances. Now, Microsoft has a few tools that help you perform that. Specifically, we just call them Windows Server migration tools. And those will perform the migrations of the core Windows Server services. So things like DNS, DHCP, the core Windows services that are built into Windows Server can be migrated using those tools. you'll have to migrate your data and, you know, third-party applications manually, essentially. There's not a, you know, wizard to help you perform that migration. But, you know, big picture, you can't perform an in-place upgrade. You need to fire up new virtual machines or new physical servers and then migrate the applications, migrate the data, migrate the services running on the Windows Server service itself.
So you could have saved us a bunch of headaches the other day trying to make it work. It just didn't work for us.
Sorry about that. Yeah, do a search for Windows Server migration tools, and that will be a big help in your migration process.
And you said Microsoft sets those and makes those all available for free?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. So how is Microsoft working with their partners as a overall part of this process?
So Microsoft relies heavily on partners. They're the last mile to really help out customers. And we're providing a lot of free tools, not just the server migration tools that I mentioned, but we provide another tool called the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit. This is a free download from Microsoft that allows customers or partners to start the entire process with an assessment. So you can download the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit, and it will download locally and install, and you can have it look at your servers and see what's installed. It'll tell you about the hardware, the software, the resource utilization that's occurring, and it just provides a lot of very useful information about what you have. And a lot of our partners are very skilled at running this tool and reading the output and then planning the migration from that standpoint. There are a lot of additional tools available online for Microsoft for customers and partners. One of those is the Microsoft the Microsoft Migration Planning Assistant. So that's a portal where all of our partners, or many of our partners, are providing guidance and offers around Windows Server 2003 migration, both on software to help with the migration and services and hardware.
Okay, great. And we have a lot of people listening to this show that are the... They're not Microsoft partners, in any sense, but they are people that's going out there and working in the business every day, and they're working with Microsoft products and tools. How would those folks become a partner of Microsoft? What would that process look like? Are you familiar with any of that?
No, I'm sorry, Jack. I couldn't really comment on that. I think we have a Microsoft partner network where they can go and learn how to become a Microsoft partner.
Okay, good. That's good. That's what we wanted to know. So, okay, with the end of support approaching, when should a business begin its migration?
Well, it's important to begin right away. The end of support date is not until July of next year, but I don't want folks to think that they can wait until then to get started, because, like I said, it's not a trivial migration. You really have to do some planning. Right. This is not something that you can just, go through a wizard and click next a few times and be finished in an afternoon. You really have to do some planning as to, do you need new physical hardware? And our partners with our server OEMs can certainly provide you with, fabulous new hardware that's going to be a lot better than the hardware that your Windows Server 2003 OS is running on. You have to figure out, do I want to virtualize or not? And, if so, how do I do that if I've never done it before? And we have Hyper-V built into the operating system now, so it's much easier to virtualize than ever before. You have to perform the actual migration, which can be challenging, as you mentioned, but with the use of the Microsoft tools, it gets a lot easier. And then, of course, at the end, you have to test. You haven't taken that Windows Server 2003 server down yet. So you don't have a big failover moment, but you do need to test each of the services and applications individually just to be sure they work and to be sure you're ready to turn off that old server. So, it's not a trivial process, and it's important to start now so that you have time to move everything over that you need to before that support ends. Because, if you wait much longer, the service providers that are really experts at performing this migration progress, they're going to be really busy. So it's in your best interest to go ahead and start now, at least with planning.
Okay, so I think we covered already in quite a few different ways of how Microsoft is going to help, so we're not going to bring that question to you. What should the partners out there, if you are a Microsoft partner, what should you be doing to prepare for the migration to start helping your customers and clients in the field?
Well, I think it makes sense to start talking to your customers to be sure they have a migration plan. And I've covered the steps that you need to go through. You need to be sure that your customers also understand the benefits of moving to a modern OS. This is not just something that you have to do because support is ending, but it's something that you should do because you're going to get a lot out of it, right? Like the new Windows Server 2012 R2 operating system has a lot of important advancements that are going to make your customers really happy, and just ensuring that they know what those enhancements are. So things like ease of management, the productivity gains that you get from virtualizing and be able to live migrate your virtual machines between servers without any downtime, the ability to provide disaster recovery for your customers that may not have been able to afford it before or may not have the expertise to set it up. All that stuff is now built into the operating system. So we've made huge advancements in the past 10 years to really take costs out and provide new features and functionality that really save customers time and money. And just being able to sit down with your customers and talk through what they're going to get by upgrading to the new server OS. I think that's the advice that I'd provide for partners.
Perfect. And can you explain a little bit, because I don't even know much about this, and I'm sure you're pretty vast in the subject, Microsoft Azure. Can you explain what that is? Is Azure something where I can virtualize my servers with you folks and I can just set up all my clients to remote in, or what is Azure all about?
Sure. So Azure is our cloud operating system, and it's very vast in that it allows you to do a lot of things. One of the things it provides is infrastructure as a service, which allows you to fire up virtual machines in the cloud and then use those virtual machines just like you would your on-premise virtual machines. So if you want to offload some of your Windows Server 2003 applications or services to virtual machines running in Azure, you can certainly do that. So infrastructure as a service just allows you to fire up virtual machines and store data and interact with infrastructure sitting in the cloud just as if it were local.
So what kind of end clients would I use at that point?
You use the same end client, any type of application. If you're talking about like an RDP client, which you would use to connect to remote desktop services, those type of clients, you would use the same type of clients whether you're connecting to local virtual machines or virtual machines running up in Microsoft Azure.
Okay. And I would guess with Azure, it sounds like I don't have to worry about any upgrades then, right? Does Microsoft take care of all that for me?
They do. We keep the operating system up to date, and you do not have to worry about providing updates.
Okay. Well, do you have enough time here? We're going to talk a little bit about hardware. Can we do that?
Sure. We could try.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some hardware requirements for Server 2012, because obviously my server probably running Windows Server 2003 or 2003 small business and working for some clients. I mean, we've actually pulled these servers out of closets, and there was enough dust in it where you could probably build a little rat's nest in there. But they probably have to upgrade that hardware, right? I mean, what kind of hardware requirements are we looking at for 2012?
So Windows Server 2012 R2, the CPU requirements are 1.4 gigahertz, 64-bit processor, 512 megabytes of RAM, and 32 gigabytes of disk space. So that's not too much.
No, and we did notice that the other day. How come, this is a question straight from me, because this is off of my desk, why is it that Microsoft did not create, and I know it's probably because technology is changing so fast, a server 2012 32-bit so I can use my older servers?
The limitation with 32-bit is it can only address 4 gigabytes of memory. So if you want to put more than 4 gigabytes in your server, and most people do these days, a 32-bit operating system can't utilize that memory. So that's the main reason, I think.
Well, yeah, you'd be exactly right. I mean, you can't run a server nowadays with 4 gigs of memory. It just wouldn't make sense.
So right.
I'm glad
With Windows Server 2003, that's the maximum amount of memory that Windows Server 2003 standard could address. So we've made huge improvements since then.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Well, and the cost of memory has come down. So, I mean, you can buy more.
Sure. And memory makes everything better. You know, when you're able to run virtual machines and applications that can take advantage of a lot of memory, they have to go to disk a lot less often, and everything's faster.
Right. Yeah, it is. Well, especially when you're virtualized and you need more RAM. You just can't help that.
Right.
Okay, so let me see here. There was a question I was going to ask you. Oh, a couple of the viewers that wrote in before when we did the licensing show was talking about the change, and maybe hopefully you can explain this to me because I don't know, the change in the structure of Server 2012 licensing for CALS. It changed somehow from 2008. Can you maybe explain that?
I'm not aware of any changes, Jack, between 2008 R2 and Windows Server 2012 on the CAL licensing. The only change I'm aware of is that Windows Server 2008 R2 was often bundled with 5 CALs, and Windows Server 2012 is usually not bundled with any CALs. But other than that, there aren't any changes.
Okay.
Is that the change they were talking about?
Yeah, I believe so. Well, they were saying that they didn't want to upgrade their client because 2012 CAL licenses cost more than 2008 for some reason. I didn't understand that.
No, the CAL pricing is not more with Windows Server 2012 versus 2008 R2. But when you introduce that first Windows Server 2012 R2 into your network, if you don't have any other Windows Server 2012 instances running, then you will need to purchase Windows Server 2012 CALs. If you're running on old CALs, then you know you'd be out of compliance with Microsoft. So you'd want to be sure that when you introduce the first Windows Server 2012 server to your network, that you purchase Windows Server 2012 CALs for your users or your devices.
Now, here's something that came up from a lot of school districts that I work with, is they're under the understanding, and I think I used to be maybe when XP was released, if I buy Windows 7 or now Windows 8.1 Pro or the Enterprise Edition, does a CAL come with that so I can hook it to the domain controller?
No, there are no CALs that are sold with any of the Windows licenses. Those are all just purchased separately from whoever you buy your Microsoft licenses from. So when you purchase let's say a company hires a new employee and issues them a new laptop running Windows 8.1, they would need to purchase a new Windows Server CAL for that user.
Okay, I got you. Okay, well, that makes sense. It puts it into perspective anyway, so I'll spread that around the school network so everybody knows that. So anyway, I guess, Eric, the biggest thing now is I'm going to let you kind of wrap with some finishing thoughts. So if you want to maybe have some final thoughts you got rolling through your head, maybe send it out there to our listeners.
Sure. So I guess I just wrap up and say Windows Server 2003 end of support is July of 2015. And you want to be sure that you move off of Windows Server 2003 before that. And you really need to, a lot of folks just want to virtualize their Windows Server 2003 and move that to a new server, but that does not really address the problem. You know, the problem is Windows Server 2003 itself won't have any more security updates after the end of support date. So it's important to move off of Windows Server 2003 for security and compliance reasons. And also just because you're going to get such a better experience with Windows Server 2012 R2. The new features and functionality in there make the server much easier to manage. It enables, you know, things that you just couldn't do before. It's going to increase your uptime, increase your productivity, and really modernize your infrastructure to a point where it's going to last and make you much more productive for a long time. So start right away with planning your Windows Server 2003 migration. Take advantage from all the tools available from Microsoft. I mentioned the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit, the Microsoft, let me get the name of that other tool. The Microsoft Server Migration Tools and the Microsoft Migration Planning Assistant. So the three of those tools are awesome free tools available from Microsoft to help you with your migration planning and the actual execution. So that's it for me, Jack.
Well, we'll give you one more final. I want one more final word of advice from you from Microsoft. Okay. Is What would you say to all those folks out there still running Windows XP on the desktop?
Okay, support for Windows XP ended in April. So you really need to move off of that for many of the same reasons why you need to move off of Windows Server 2003. Critical updates are not being provided for Windows XP, and a modern operating system like Windows 8.1 is going to provide you with a ton of benefits over Windows XP. So really, you should start that migration process now.
And here you go. Now, since I have an inside track with Microsoft and I'm talking to you guys live here, well, we're recording this for the show, but when is Windows 10 going to be released?
Sorry, Jack, I don't have any.
I thought maybe I'd have some inside information. You know,
that's what
I'm
shooting
for.
That.
That's all right. Well, Eric, I want to thank Eric Mills very much for being on the show. I really do appreciate it. I'm sorry it took us so long to get this put together to talk to you folks at Microsoft. But I'm sure after hearing all of this that the listeners will be migrating to Server 2012 R2. Don't go to anything less. And Eric, I really want to thank you and your team for putting this together. And I hope maybe we can do it again in the future sometime.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jack. I appreciate your time.
Have a wonderful evening and have a happy holidays.
Okay, you too, my friend.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, once again, that was very, very, just a very humbling experience to be able to talk to the Microsoft team there and to be talked to Mr. Eric Mills from Microsoft. And it was just a wonderful conversation. And I'm glad I was able to throw a couple of those other questions in there that I'm sure a lot of the listeners out there are kind of thinking about the whole migration thing. Now, let's give you some wrap-up thoughts about 2003, Windows Server 2008 R2, and Windows Server 2012 R2. And you know, we threw that little Azure in there also because I'm not even really familiar at this time with Azure. And I think that cloud-based server, remote desktoping into cloud-based servers, I think that is going to be the wave of the future because teams like Microsoft and the other great supporting partners out there can supply so much more for us than what we could probably supply in our own server racks. So as you heard in the interview, I talked a little bit about us trying to upgrade a Windows Server 2003 to Windows Server 2012. The upgrade went horribly wrong, so I wouldn't suggest that you try just to do a straight upgrade. And as Eric stated, you know, Microsoft doesn't support just upgrading an operating system like you would your desktop system if you would do that. So you would roll out a new virtual machine or roll out a new machine and then migrate everything into that new machine. And that's what we're kind of working on right now with our old Windows 2003 servers. Now, as you also heard in the interview, I talked a little bit about, should you upgrade to old technology? And by old technology, I'm talking about Windows Server 2008 R2. There's something to be said about that because a lot of folks are still doing that. But you heard in the interview that Microsoft's going to stop selling it very soon. So, you know, the end of support will happen very soon also. And I know I created a lot of software over the years. I've written a lot of different programs. It's very hard for a program to go back to version 1 to do an update when you're writing code for version 10. If you even still have that source code, it's very hard to do that. So I understand why these companies are doing it. And a lot of technology directors out there say, well, you know, Microsoft is holding us over a barrel and they're strangling us for more money. That's not it at all. There's better features. There's more security baked into these new operating systems that we got to worry about. That's why you're migrating. You're migrating for the benefit of you and your server rack in your company. You're not always upgrading for the benefit of, you know, the Microsoft team and their bottom financial line. That's not what we're looking for, because even if you have, even if you're working with Mac operating systems, it's the same thing. You know, you don't want to still be running OS X or OS 10, you know, whatever, a Tiger or Lion. I mean, because the security updates are all there and baked in. So if you are upgrading, if you're migrating your servers, purchase Windows Server 2012 R2. Don't go backwards. Don't go to old technology. You know, because you're just going to have to do this again in a couple of years. So you might as well do it now and know that we have a longer life support with 2012 R2 than what we have right now currently. You know, you heard 2003 is going away. This isn't like, and you heard me ask Eric in an interview about at the end there about Windows XP and what he thinks. Folks, I know a lot of schools out there still running Windows XP, and you're just taking a big risk to your network. So don't do that. Upgrade them boxes, you know, to Windows. He's saying Windows 8.1 now. And you heard me try to sneak in the questionnaire about Windows, you know, when's Windows 10 coming? And we were trying to get the, you know, the little inside information, but that didn't really work out. So anyway, so upgrade now to 8.1. I know the interface is a little different, but you can download a lot of, you know, nice add-ons to make the start menu normal again and do that kind of stuff with Classic Shell, as we talked about in the show some months ago. So, folks, that's it. We're going to wrap up this show tonight. I hope you enjoyed that interview. I'm sorry that the show is a couple days late. But, you know, in this actually instance, it's better late than never because the interview was just so amazing. And I'm just very, very humbled once again. And I want to thank you, Microsoft, and the Microsoft team for asking me to be a part of your upgrade strategy and to be a part of the interview process with you. And I hope we can do that again with the Microsoft team very, very soon. Folks, please remember, of all things here this holiday season, to use my Amazon link. You know, it helps these shows out. It helps me to bring you new content. It helps me to think of new things to do there for you. So, you know, money turns the wheel here in the studio, just like any other small business out there in the world. So it truly helps the show to use that Amazon link. You can go to tipsfromserveroom.com, shut off your ad blockers, deactivate those, and you will see that link. Use that when you're buying anything. If you're buying your wife, you know, a new diamond ring on Amazon, use that link. And folks, if you're not sure about Windows Server 2008 R2 or Windows Server 2012 or even VMware ESXi, I know Eric talked a lot about Microsoft's virtualization, and you know, and that's a great product also. So, you know, you can virtualize it with anything, but these are the courses that I teach. And if you, you know, you're going to migrate anyway, you have to know the ins and outs of these new servers. So you need to take a very fast-paced, you know, very robust online course, and you're probably looking for my course. Go to tipsfromtheserveroom.com, look at the online class link at the top of the page, click on that, and go into those courses and take one of those courses today. Sign up. They're very, very inexpensive. And once you sign up, I get a lot of emails that says, Jack, when I sign up, am I done? Will I ever get to, you know, view those videos again? Absolutely. Once you sign up for these courses, you are a member for life. So I never take you off. You can log in there and, you know, get a little boned up or a little updated on stuff anytime you might need the extra learning there to maybe do something that you're going to set up a DNS server and you want to watch that particular video. So once again, check those out at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Once again, when you complete that course, I do mail you a certificate in the mail. You'll receive that. They're very nice. They're wonderful to put with your resumes. They're nice to hang on your wall in your office to let people know that, hey, I'm concerned about my continuous education, and I'm continuing education, and I took this course, and there's my certificate to prove it. Once again, check those courses out at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Folks, I hope everybody has a great, great work week. There's a great, you know, if you celebrate the holidays coming up, there's a great holiday season. Maybe you get some time off work to kind of rejoice. That's another great time to take an online course. I know I take a lot of them during this time of year. So anyway, have a great week this week. And seeing that we're recording today on Thursday instead of Tuesday, it's almost over. And I'll talk to you here next Tuesday on Tips from the Server Room. Take care, my friends. I'll see you back here then. Bye for now. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.